Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I am your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmer.
Hello, Judy. Hello, viewers and listeners. Our topic for today is
Empowerment, Self-Defense, and Healing, an interview with Christine de Blasio and Christina Allard of the Safety Team.
And we just finished that interview, and that was fascinating stuff. And
boy, they are doing such great work.
They are doing such great work, and really invite you all to enjoy that interview. You will learn a lot about the work they're doing, helping they work with women in particular, helping women not only empower themselves so as to prevent violence to the extent it's possible, but also to heal from trauma as mm-hmm. well. And of course, we have a little angle on that in terms of relationships, which they also address.
Right.
So please check that out. Before we get to that, we've got all kinds of exciting stuff to talk about.
Okay.
What should we talk about first?
I don't know. What should we talk about? How about the books?
How about the books?
Okay.
What a concept. So there are books that I have written
mm-hmm.
That we've been talking about every time here, and we're going to continue to talk about. The first one being?
Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back.
And that one's available. All these books are available in all the formats you like. They're available in paperback, as mm-hmm. Kindle, and also as audiobooks,
mm-hmm.
Where I did the narration for those.
Yeah.
And a more recent book just came out a few months ago.
Right. It's Not About Communication, Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy Is Wrong.
Indeed. And, you know, check that one out, not only for all of the information in there about relationships, but also about, you know, I think what I talk about in that book is going to help us heal this country. And if that sounds a little provocative, check it out. It's especially the chapters I have in there on ideas versus ideologies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So check that out.
If people listen to you, what a better world we would have, honey.
Well, I certainly think so. I mean, what can I say? I think that's true.
I think
so too. The political powers that be don't seem to check with me first
They
do things. If they did, I'm they sure should. Things would be better, yes.
Maybe we should send the book to everybody in the Senate and Congress.
You know, it's not a bad thought. Or we'll just invite our listeners to do that, you know.
There you go. So send it to your state representatives today.
Do check that out. I want to put in a word also for my newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
And when you sign up for my newsletter, which you can do right from our website, if you're watching this, right over our heads, it says ctn7.com. If you're not watching it, that's the website, ctn7, that's the number 7, ctn7.com. Right from there, you can sign up for Dr. Chalmers' newsletter, and you will get
a free
PDF of the book that Judy is holding up right now, the title of which is
7 Words to Jumpstart Your Love Life.
Yes, indeed. And it's a nice little book. And if you want the paperback, you can get that from Amazon. Or if you want a Kindle, you can get it from Amazon. If you want to hear me narrate it, you can get it from Amazon. But if you sign up for my website, you'll get the PDF for free. So you don't even need to buy the book. What can I tell you?
No, you don't.
There's another book that we'll mention as well that I put out recently.
Mm-hmm. My husband complains about my cleaning. What do I do? Hint, it's not about the cleaning.
And that book, I wrote that book because so many people were asking about that particular circumstance. We
mm-hmm.
have hundreds of people per month that show up at one of my blog posts about that. So please check that out as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we also want to put in a word for our podcast
merch.
And that little clunk you heard, if you're just doing the audio version of this, is our two beautiful Couples Therapy in 7 Word mugs clinking
mm-hmm.
together.
Mm-hmm.
And they have on one side
our beautiful logo,
designed by my beautiful wife.
Thank you. And on the other side, our Couples Therapy in 7 Words motto, be kind, don't panic, and have faith.
And you can not only get cups there, mugs, you can also get t-shirts, and I'm going to hold up our beautiful tote bag, which
because
has...
Because we like it so much.
Because we like it, and we use it all the time.
Yes.
This is really, you know, it's
same
great.
Thing, logo on
logo
one
on
side,
side
motto,
on
the, motto other,
on the other,
and lightweight, sturdy, can carry all your books.
A great piece of merchandise.
All your t-shirts, all your mugs.
Right.
And everything else.
And so now, let's put in a word for our sponsor. And our sponsor is
The Blue Tent, Erotic Tales
yes.
from the Bible by Laria Zilber.
And Laria is someone that we know, and Laria has arranged with us to promote this book, and we are delighted to do it because it's a
we
wonderful book.
Are.
And I want to put in a special word about the audiobook for that one, which is still is, as of this recording, isn't quite available, but I'll bet it will be within a few days. Mm-hmm. And Judy did the narration for it. And if you like her voice, which I fell in love with personally, mm-hmm. You will love to hear her her narration of that incredible book, The Blue Tent. It's a book to share with your partner or just enjoy on your own.
That's right. Talk about reigniting the spark. It's something you can read in bed and
absolutely.
Have a lot of fun with.
So, a lot of fun. So, please do that. So, let's turn now to our interview.
Okay.
And you'll hear Judy introducing our guests, and we'll have the interview, and we will see you on the other side.
Our guests today are Christine de Blasio and Christina Allard. Dr. Christine de Blasio is the founder and director of Stonehouse Associates, a large outpatient mental health practice in Vermont. Dr. de Blasio is also the co-founder and president of the Safety Team, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to prevent violence, foster resilience, heal trauma, and build safe communities. A fifth degree black belt in Chinese Kenpo Karate, Christine offers workshops on empowerment, self-defense, violence prevention, and trauma recovery at colleges, middle and high schools, and at both community and corporate settings. Christine was recently named USA Today's Vermont Woman of the Year in recognition of her innovative work in the field of trauma recovery for survivors of interpersonal or sexual violence. Christina Allard is a licensed physical therapist specializing in pediatrics and school-based therapy. She is a co-founder of the Safety Team and serves as a lead instructor on the team. Christina holds a black belt in Kenpo Jiu-Jitsu. She has pursued additional training in childhood trauma and its impacts on development. She incorporates her knowledge of neuromuscular and somatic responses to develop movement strategies for emotional regulation in young people on a daily basis. Christine and Christina, welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're glad to be here.
Well, delighted to have you. I should mention for our viewers and listeners, this is one of those full disclosure moments. It's like, well, I am affiliated with Stonehouse Associates, so that's how I know Christine from going way back. I lost track of how many years that's been now. I think it's been about 12 or 13 years, maybe more than that. I don't know. It's been a while. More than that, actually. Anyway, been quite a while.
Since 2008?
2007. It's been like 16 years. Yeah. Holy
wow.
cow. Yeah,
wow.
It's been a while. And we are just meeting Christina now for the first time. So welcome. And also, I will mention for our viewers and listeners, Christine was on episode 9, and this is episode 120. So Christine, you are one of our few returning folks that we've had back, which just shows how much esteem we hold you in.
I feel so special.
Indeed, you are special.
Absolutely. So how did you, I'll just toss this question out to both of you. How did you get into the work that you're doing? Tell us something about your journey that led you here.
Well, you know, I started training in the martial arts because my two daughters were training. And actually, my husband was training as well. And I was the reluctant last person to start. But it was free for me to train. And I'm a sucker for free. So I took my first class and at that point, I was hooked. And I continued, earned, you know, first degree, second degree, all the way up to fifth degree last October. So that's how I got involved in the martial arts. And through the martial arts, I was offered an opportunity many years ago to teach a women's self-defense class through the sensei at the dojo that I was training at. So, you know, I and another martial artist started offering these once a year, twice a year, you know, something like that. And in the spirit of how I do many things, I thought, well, you know, is this the best that we can do? So we did a lot of research. We worked with some of the other women who are at the dojo. At the time I was training in the dojo, there were few women. It was mostly men training. And so when women entered the dojo in these classes, we became fast friends. And Christina and I are fast friends. and so I started teaching some of these women's self-defense classes, invited the other women to start teaching them. We formed a nonprofit. We did a lot of research. And 20 plus years later, we're offering a program that I feel I'm pretty proud of that offers empowerment self-defense, which is violence prevention, and it is at the cutting edge of that field, as well as a therapeutic empowerment self-defense program, which is an innovative trauma recovery program that involves both the mind and the body and you know, sort of traditional psychoeducation along with reparative movements in a finely attuned way for survivors. So that's kind of how it started, and it's an outgrowth of my work during the day. I'm a psychologist, as you know, Bruce and Judy, but for the listeners, I'm a psychologist who has specialized in the field of trauma for the 30 plus years that I have been in the field. And to be quite honest, part of my interest in the safety team is I have two daughters. And I was really hoping that the world would be a better place for them, a safer place for them. And they helped inspire me to offer these violence prevention and trauma recovery programs too. You know, as a mom, that's what you want, a better world, a safer world for women, for my daughters, for everyone to be able to walk through this world in a way that they can have freedom and feel safe. So sure. That's my story.
Well,
yeah. Can I just ask a quick clarification? Can you ask me what a dojo is?
A dojo is where you train. It's a martial arts school. Basically is what a dojo is. So it's where you train in the martial arts in the style that we train in.
Thank you. And Christina, you want to tell us your story?
Similar to Christine, I started with my daughter as a way of for us to have a mother-daughter activity together, but also to make sure that she was feeling empowered and feeling like she had good control and good options for how she moved through the world. And she's since gone on to other things, and here I am still doing it, and I just earned my black belt this year.
Yesterday.
And like Christine said, there wasn't a lot of women there, so every time a woman walked in, you like went over and introduced yourself. And actually that's still happening, because somebody walked up to me last night and introduced themselves. They were a brand new white belt and the only other woman in the room at that point. So we started doing safety team classes. We were building an empowerment self-defense sort of curriculum, and then we started expanding it into a therapeutic program that really interested me because of the work that I do with kids. I see so much trauma in the kids that I work with. They are often getting sent to PT or movement disabilities or regulation issues. And I was seeing that a lot of it was really based in trauma and not necessarily in orthopedic problems.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Wow. You know, it's interesting, the distinction that you're making between empowerment self-defense and therapeutic empowerment self-defense, which I'm sure they're related, of course. For listeners, I used to do a lot of work. I haven't so much recently, but I used to do a lot of work with trauma survivors as part of my work as a psychologist before I got more into working with couples. But I'm just curious as to, you know, if you want to speak about the differences between those two programs that you offer. And of course, let me throw in something else too. We're also being a, you know, couples therapy in seven words. We're a couples podcast, you know, about relationships. Curious about your take on how trauma affects relationships among the women that you work with, and also how healing that you offer has affected relationships as well. So there's a whole bunch. There's
I
a
was just going to say
smorgasbord. A bunch of stuff to talk about, but please.
Here, we'll go to sleep. You go.
I'm going to start at the end and then wind back to the beginning. So what you asked about is what's the impact on couples and how does this relate? And I would say that trauma does not occur in isolation. We are not functioning in isolation. How we feel affects other people in our life and vice versa, affects our relationships. So trauma can have a profound effect, long-standing effect, on how someone does mentally, emotionally. We know that it can affect employment. I mean, it has all kinds of ripple effects in terms of your life, but also in terms of those in your life, for example, your parenting or your relationship. So if trauma affects the relationships in that way, healing can then also have those ripple effects in a positive way. So as you begin to heal, it changes how the relationships might function. I also think an understanding of trauma is essential in relationships because it's easy to misinterpret a trauma activation. That is, when you are activated, your past trauma is activated, your partner may not know what is happening. And it's so easy, we all do it, it's so easy to make assumptions about what's happening. And typically we assume it's something about us or it relates to us, when in fact it may just be a trauma, what I call a trauma echo, a result of the trauma that happened before that comes out in your behavior that then impacts your partner. And the more both partners can understand the role that trauma plays, the better I think the relationship can be, both in terms of healing, understanding, communication, in every way that I can think of. So I think that addresses the end of your question, but I'm not sure I remember all of it.
I was going to jump in and say that behavior, that big unexpected behavior that, I mean, I see it a lot with the kids that I work with, but I see it in adults as well, that you think that what you said or what you did was very innocuous and not, and you get such an unexpected and large over the top response. That's what I try to help people understand is often a trauma response. And maybe they could step back a moment and say, hey, you know, is there something I can do to help you in this second or this moment, to give you a second to pause? Because I think that helps.
So what I would also add to it, to go to the beginning of your question, was it's mysterious both to the partner and to the person experienced the trauma activation, exactly what happened. Often people don't know or understand why they had such a big response to some sensory cue that doesn't seem like it's a really problematic cue.
They
may not recognize that. So for the therapeutic impairment self-defense program, we spend some time on psychoeducation, explaining the neurobiology of trauma, explaining how sensory cues then get encoded and then can cause you to react in a very strong way, even though the cue itself seems innocuous and harmless, but it's related to the trauma. So for example, what I often say or with clients is that, so imagine that you were assaulted in a pizza parlor. So it may be the smell of pizza, the sound that you might hear in a pizza parlor, the red and white that you often see in pizza parlor, whatever it is, can set off that trauma activation. Not logical, because it's not stored in the logical part of your brain, but it's stored in the sensory part of your brain. So you may, whenever you're having pizza, you may have a really strong reaction to whatever's going on, and that is a trauma echo. So that's part of what we do in the therapeutic program. What I often say, the difference between our impairment self-defense program and our therapeutic impairment self-defense program, I liken it to baking. So when you bake a cake, you put in flour and sugar and whatever else you put in, and sometimes that turns into a cake. But those same ingredients can turn into brownies, depending on how you fix that recipe. So the two programs are related in that the physical component is similar, but how we titrate it, how we deliver it is different. So in the empowerment self-defense, the community programs, the violence prevention programs, we do that in a pretty structured way in a larger class setting, about 20 people, still with a small student to instructor ratio, but it's a set program that's, you know, we can alter a little bit, but it's delivered in a way that it's focused on prevention. In the therapeutic program, it's far more attuned to the individuals who are in it. We have a much lower participant to instructor or therapist ratio. And we do a lot of psychoeducation, and we do what we call reparative movement. So it's movement that helps you move through whatever the trauma was in a way where you have control, you have safety, and you have mastery. Mm. And so those components help with healing. And we can help if they have that trauma activation. We can't necessarily address that in the community classes because it's a large group, but we expect that might happen in the therapeutic program, and we can help them calm their nervous system and then gradually move through it. So they end up feeling like they have really mastered it. They have really empowered themselves through that traumatic situation that occurred previously.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, when I got the various trainings that I got in trauma, the research, and I know I'm telling you stuff you already know, but maybe for our viewers there and listeners, the research on what actually helps people heal from trauma inevitably involves more than just talking about it, mm-hmm. because we learn to talk around it and dissociate from it. It's a pretty normal, perfectly reasonable way of preventing ourselves from freaking out all the time. Mm-hmm. So all of the therapies that work will always involve something like revisiting physically and or emotionally and or mentally, revisiting the triggers in a way that gives you mastery. Mm-hmm. So that what your brain does is then it learns, oh, it's safe to be reminded of this. It wasn't safe to happen, but it was safe to be reminded of it. The memory of it isn't dangerous, even though the events were dangerous. And that's how all of the various therapies they have now for, you know, EMDR, for example, eye movement desensitization reprocessing, they all work with some variation on that theme. And it's interesting to hear your program, the movement component, I was imagining, does exactly that. It's exactly what you said. And or, you know, it always involves some kind of exposure. So it's like, well, you know, you're going to mentally visit the pizza parlor and smell the pizza and know that you're still safe enough that your brain can learn that doesn't have to trigger you anymore.
You know, what I would add to that is the most common response in the face of trauma is the freeze response. So we have fight, flight, freeze, or tonic immobility. 70% of survivors have experienced the freeze response. So they were unable to move through that trauma or respond in a natural brain, I guess, a survival system, you know, that used to be perhaps what helped us to freeze. And under certain circumstances, freezing does help. You know, we see it in the animal kingdom. So you might, you know, for example, you know, a deer, when you see a deer, the first thing they do is they freeze, mm-hmm. you know, and that's to keep them safe. If you tend to approach them, then they might flee. You know, so it really, we have these different responses, but our brains, you know, we don't get to necessarily choose unless we train ourselves to respond differently. And that's part of what we do in these empowerment self-defense mm-hmm. prevention classes, is training your body to respond differently in the face of threat. In the therapeutic program, often the freeze response is what happens. So we demystify that. We explain why that happens so that you understand that's not your fault. That's just, it's a brain reflex. And that's what happened. The other part that happens during trauma is Broca's area, the motor speech area of your brain, goes offline. Yeah. And so you're not able to speak necessarily when you're under a high level of threat. And that is important for survivors to know, because often there's that blame, not just from survivors, but from our court systems and from our society.
We heard about this recently, didn't we?
Yes, yes, we did. And so
a very famous case.
Exactly. And our legal systems have been, you know, that's been a very pervasive part of our legal systems. We didn't say no. Well, of course you didn't, because Broca's area went offline. Yeah. And you didn't scream, but you couldn't, because your brain shut down that part of your response. And so that's really helpful in reducing the shame that survivors might feel when they understand, oh, it's a brain reflex, you know. And the way I often explain is, if somebody hits your knee in that spot, you know, that reflex you have when you get hit in the knee, like, you can't not make your leg go up unless there's something wrong with your leg or your reflex. And I explain this response in the same way, that it's a brain reflex. Mm-hmm. The difference is you can train yourself to respond differently. You can't train your leg, but you can train your body to respond differently in the face of this kind of threat. Mm-hmm.
And healing from that, because your body is holding that trauma in a sensory way, healing from that helps to move through a sensory way as well, like to have those experiences and have it done in a very controlled, very masterfully positioned and connected. I think that the other piece that we didn't mention is there's a lot of connection that happens in those classes, that are connection between the instructor and the students, but also between the students. So it's a very welcoming, warm, and they all know that they're there for the same reason. So it takes that piece right out, and it makes a really strong connection really quickly.
So if a woman comes to you, let's say she's been, you know, battered, either raped or just brutalized in some physical way, what type of program do you, can you walk us through the steps of what happens when somebody comes to you who's had abuse?
For the therapeutic program, what happens first is I will meet with them, or another mental health provider will meet with them. There's up to three sessions that includes the psychoeducation, gives them an opportunity to share what they want to share, but it's not required that they share a whole lot, because really the healing is happening through the body. You know, and Bruce, I know you know this, Peter Levine and Bessel van der Kolk talk about the body remembers. Yeah. The body is where that trauma is stored. So often we don't have a narrative and we don't have a story. We kind of know what happened, but that's not essential for this program, for the healing. Sometimes people choose to share, sometimes they don't, and it works either way. So we go back to your question, Judy. So first, it's the psychoeducation, it's the neurobiology, explaining how trauma works, explaining how the brain works, explaining how it's stored in a sensory way. So we make sure that people are ready for the small group classes. And then in the small group classes, we move through some basic empowerment self-defense movements, but in a very well-paced, attuned manner, so that people end up with that sense of both connection, mastery, and reparative movement. They feel safe. We also have the capacity to respond to whether there's trauma activation of an activated sort, whether they're adrenalized, or if they're dissociating. And so we're able to work through that so that they can then come back, rejoin, go back to that activity if they choose to, and move through it. So we have that capacity in the therapeutic program that we don't have in the more general community classes. And one last thing I would say is that there are many survivors who would not feel comfortable in our group community prevention classes because it sounds intimidating. They're not ready for it. The survivors that I have worked with, and I could say you too, probably, who have come to the therapeutic program have had some really intense, multiple episodes of interpersonal violence that's quite significant. And I would say universally, they report feeling that it's been transformational, that they walk out differently than they walk in a good way. That they feel empowered, they feel like they have a voice, they can set boundaries, not just around sexual issues, but around work issues or family issues, or there's just a profound change that we see incorporating both the mind and the body in a way that feels safe. Our tagline or our line is usually mindful movement under conditions of safety. Mindful movement under conditions of safety. And that's what we do really in both programs, but especially in the therapeutic program.
I want to highlight a couple of things that she said. We do talk a lot about boundaries and how important they are, and learning to listen to your body to recognize when people are crossing those boundaries. So that's a really important part. We're also really focusing on using your voice to set boundaries. Not just your body, but using your voice to set boundaries. So I think that's an important component. And we're describing and modeling affirmative consent all the time. Mm. So we're giving people the power back over what happens to their body, what happens to them and what they participate in, and not assuming that that's what they need or want at that moment.
And is there a set time limit on the program, or do they have to leave after a certain time, or what? How does that work?
The program, the group, there's three
therapeutic.
Yeah, there's three small group sessions that we do in the therapeutic program after the individual sessions are completed. And there's also a little bit of in between the group sessions if they need another individual session that's available. But it is a time limited program.
We have talked about doing booster sessions. There's always an interest in doing that. And I have to say that the participants really form nice connections with one another. You know, sometimes it's really hard to end it because it's
last time we were standing in the parking lot for an hour trying to say goodbye. We were trying to all get in our cars and we were struggling to be able to do that.
Yeah, it's really powerful connections that are formed but amongst all of us. You know, I know I have just as hard a time ending it as they do because it's just so I don't know what the word is. It's so touching. It's so profound. You know, I've been a therapist for a long time.
Those connections too.
You do.
Personal relationships.
And to see such growth in such a short period of time, I'd like to think I'm a decent therapist, but that isn't what normally happens in my office. It's not six sessions and wow, you're just doing, I can see it. You're doing so great. You know,
it's really interesting to see the way somebody walks in the first time into a group session. You know, they're feeling nervous and understandably. And then the way they walk in the second or third time, it's visibly different to see them actually being present in their body. It's really something that you can see a difference when they're walking in. It's quite astonishing.
You know, as a couples therapist, I'd be curious. I don't know if anybody's done this kind of research or done it yet, maybe, because I'm gonna guess that a fair number of those women that walk out of those sessions empowered then experience marital crises or relationship crises. Not because that's, you know, inherently a bad thing, but because it is so often, and I'm talking about even if their partners aren't abusive, you know, even if their partners right. weren't the source of the abuse, particularly if they were the source of the abuse, but even if they weren't, that often precipitates, when somebody gets empowered, it often precipitates something of a crisis in the relationship, often for good. Occasionally they end up breaking up. I'm just curious if you have any anecdotes about that.
Well, I would say it can work both ways. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to put a positive spin on it, because what I have also heard from participants is the relief in their partners that they've been able to move forward.
Think about it.
If you're feeling more empowered in your body and more present in your body, and you're more receptive to physical touch or whatever it might be, or there's just less trauma activation, think about how powerfully positive that can be in a relationship. For partners who are supportive, to be like, I'm so glad that you're able to work through that. And for them to understand and not personalize some of the trauma activation that has occurred before. So they, you know, they have an aha moment that, oh, that wasn't about me. Mm-hmm. Now, we all tend to do that. Like something happens and we're like, all right, what did I do?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and so that can be powerfully positive. And if it's a growth mindset couple, then I think this can be powerfully not only healing, but transformational for them. And if it's not, then it's pivotal in terms of perhaps a powerful change for one of the people.
Well, and that's what precipitates the crisis.
Yeah.
It's often fascinating. You know, I liken it to the phenomenon of when somebody is dealing with an addiction. You know, the original definition of dysfunctional family was around that very issue. Somebody had an addiction. The person with the addiction stopped doing the addictive behavior. They stopped drinking, let's say. And instead of everything being just hunky-dory, they came to discover how much the whole system had organized itself around the drinking. And it wasn't so simple to make things right just by saying, oh, stop all that problematic drinking, you'll be fine. That to some extent, you know, trauma reactions, if they're not the same thing as addiction, of course, but their trauma reactions are having effects on a relationship that often the relationship will organize itself around. And when that gets better, you never know how that's going to turn out. I'm fascinated by it. And, you know, that notion of growth mindset, our seven words, you know, be kind, don't panic, and have faith. That's our seven words. When I say have faith, I'm really saying have a growth mindset. Mm-hmm. I mean the same thing by that. That sense that, oh, wow, this is different now. Now what do we do? Yes, the couples that have that kind of faith are the ones that grow through it. They do well. They're grateful for it. Yeah. I've had survivors of trauma. I've never had anybody say, gee, glad I was traumatized. I've never heard anybody say that. I've heard many people say, I'm so grateful for the growth I experienced having to recover from that. And I've heard couples say that as well. I'm so grateful for this crisis. Apparently something needed to happen. And so, you know, something like your program can precipitate that crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like a good crisis. Yeah.
We have had people tell us, like you were talking about, that they realized that they hadn't set good boundaries and that they were able to set boundaries at work and with their family that they hadn't ever set before. And their family found that unusual and maybe precipitated some type of crisis. Yeah. They didn't describe it as a crisis, but they definitely said it was different.
Is there a component for partners? I'm just curious.
There isn't. There isn't at this point. It isn't actually something that we have focused on yet, but it's an interesting point, you know, how to incorporate a partner in this healing so that they continue to grow together rather than grow apart. It's an interesting idea.
I mean, our team is always looking for help, volunteers, you know, ways of connecting in the community and having our programs are generally aligned towards female presenting people. And there's always requests for all gender programs, and we simply need more help to be able to get that out there. So while we recognize the need, we also recognize our limitations and being able to provide something for everyone.
So you're all volunteer. Everybody who works there is a volunteer.
Yeah, we've been volunteers for over 20 years. And I often joke that if I had actually been working during that time, I would have retired 10 years ago. but that's good. It's okay. Because I really enjoy this work and find it so gratifying. You know, with all the things that are going on in the world, all the violence, I mean, I kept wishing that things would be safer and better, and they're not. To be able to do something on the front end, the prevention part is, it kind of keeps my faith, as you talk about have faith, kind of keeps my faith, my hope up that, all right, we're doing our part, and the ripple effects of that, you know, spreads out. So when we work with a group of 20 participants, we know that they're going home and they're talking to their family and they're talking to their friends, and then they often come to the classes. And so I that kind of keeps me going. But yes, to answer your question, we are volunteers. And as Christina said, we're always looking for support, talent, resources, any kind of help that people have if they're, you know, no amount is too small, because we know that this program could be even more robust. Like you mentioned, Bruce, you know, there's just so many different avenues we could go into that we just can't because we have day jobs.
Indeed. I did notice, I just saw the other day that the safety team got a grant from, and I'm spacing out on what it was from, but it was a Vermont organization.
I think. We just got a grant from the Vermont Women's Fund, and that's their second year that they have funded us for administrative costs. You know, because there's a lot of behind the scenes, there's the in classes, there's behind the scenes, there's organizing it, there's equipment, insurance, curriculum development, you know, like any organization.
Rent.
So rent. Yeah. So they've been a supporter for the last couple of years. We've had private donations, which have been fundamentally helpful and have allowed me to write the curriculum for the therapeutic program in a way that it can be disseminated. And we've had a graphic designer volunteer to put it into a format that can be used. We've had a videographer volunteer to video some of the movements and techniques so that we can share those. We've had a lot of support. We've also had support from the Vermont Center for Crime Victims, and that has helped fund the therapeutic program for the last 4 or 5 years. So that support has been, you know, the support has kept us going. There's no way we could do what we do without that.
Mm-hmm. And how are people referred to you? How do they find out about you?
I don't know, but they do.
Well, we have a website, and a lot of therapists refer into our therapeutic program for sure. And I would say that the community program tends to be mostly word of mouth, but we do publicize a lot of community town centers will publish in their calendars when they're holding a class.
And you mentioned the website. We'll put it in the notes, but please tell folks what's your website.
It is thesafetyteam.org. thesafetyteam.org. And I would say that we're in the process of updating it. So what's there right now is our long history of websites, and we'll have a brand new beautiful website at some point this year with even more information. You know, in terms of how people hear about us, you know, I was kidding, but I don't know how. We spent a lot of time actually in the beginning putting it out there on Front Porch Forum, in the colleges, in the communities, and now word of mouth, and we still do all those things. Word of mouth has really helped. And for the therapeutic program, I initially reached out to all the therapists that I knew, all the organizations that I thought would be interested. And we currently hold a waiting list, but primarily we hold a waiting list because our grant is small, and so we can only serve so many people at a time at this point. So we have put work into getting the word out there, but I think the climate of violence has people seeking it too. And we are the only empowerment self-defense program in this area. Mm-hmm. There are other self-defense, but they're not what qualifies as empowerment self-defense, which means they're strength-based, they're feminist, they're trauma-informed. You know, there's certain criteria that you need to be considered an empowerment self-defense program, which we are. Uh-huh.
I wonder if, especially since USA Today honored you, I wonder if you're hearing from, you know, places far and wide. I know you've been on other podcasts, right, from distant places, not just local.
Yeah, we've been contacted all over. I'm in conversations with people from the Netherlands, Australia, and Missouri.
Africa.
Africa. Mm-hmm. You know, so that has been a really Texas. Especially with the therapeutic program, because there isn't another one like it. It's the first of its kind, and that has generated considerable interest. But again, we are limited by funding. You know, we'd go all over.
When you get your MacArthur grant, we'll have you back on.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to say is one program we haven't talked about is we also are certifying other instructors. So we're certifying people to be community-based empowerment self-defense instructors, as well as therapeutic empowerment self-defense instructors.
That's actually the future, I think, of our organization, because we can only reach so many people as we offer classes or do the therapeutic program. I think the best way for us to really touch a lot of lives in a positive way is to train other instructors. And so that can spread the program, you know, near and far. And that's our hope, to be able to do that. The other thing that we do is corporate presentations. So just educating sort of corporate sites and corporate members around the issues of violence against people. And we teach, they're pretty fun, interactive presentations, about 45 minutes to an hour. And we get the audience up doing some really basic stuff. And they're really fun to do. And they're really fun to, you know, people have a lot of fun. We did our first at Leahy's, I'm always going to say the name of the conference wrong, the Vermont Economic Conference for Women. All those words are correct, but I might have them in the wrong order. So we did our first conference there of that type, and we've done it, you know, in many, many other sites, and have had such a positive response, and it's always really fun to do.
And that presentation is open to everyone. That's an all-gender presentation. So.
I actually think our typical presentation is useful for all genders as well. Because we've had when we've done those, it's educational for those who are not necessarily at high risk to learn about what is going on with, you know, other people and what kind of risk are they at that I never even thought of. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to quote this young man that I met when we were bringing awareness to the issue before Laura's March. And I don't know if you know about Laura's March, it doesn't happen anymore, but Laura Kate Winterbottom was sexually assaulted and actually murdered. And her parents started a march and a foundation. And we were a part of that one year. And as part of that, I had the very difficult job of being on Church Street telling people about it. Boy, that was really fun. Approaching people, just trying to say, hey, there's a march going on, because they all thought I was trying to sell something. And I wasn't. But it actually was incredibly valuable, because one of the things that a young man said to me, which I will never forget, is he said, he was about 20, and he said, sexual assault is the last thing you think about until it's the only thing you think about. Mm-hmm. And he said that in response to his girlfriend being assaulted. Mm-hmm. Before that, he had never thought about it. And then after that, he had this awareness. And you don't want that to be what brings awareness to it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for doing this. Much appreciated.
It's always fun. Pleasure. Always fun.
And we will, as I mentioned, we'll put in the notes the safetyteam.org. And boy, bless you for your work. Yes. It's great stuff.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody out there who's listening that would like to volunteer, you can get in touch with Christine and Christina through the safetyteam.org. And thank you for the work that you do.
No,
Very touching.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back. I hope you learned as much from Christine and Christina that we did, and really bless their hearts for all the important work that they're doing.
Great work that they are doing. And do check them out. Thesafetyteam.org is their website.
Mm-hmm.
So before we wrap up, we're just going to remind you of a few things. First of all, check out all the books that I've written.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to improve your relationship, any of those books will do the job. Why don't we just mention the titles?
Right. We have Reigniting the Spark, or as we like to call it, the book that started the podcast, because it did, Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back. And Bruce's latest book is not about communication, why everything you know about couples therapy is wrong.
Indeed. And if you sign up for my newsletter, which comes out a couple of times a month and is just a lot of fun. I have mm-hmm. fun writing it, and folks have told me they have fun reading it.
Right.
If you sign up for that, you will get a link that will allow you to download a PDF of my book, 7 Words to Jumpstart Your Love Life.
Mm-hmm.
So check that out. The PDF is in full color. That's even better than the paperback, which was in grayscale.
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
You know, if you want to do that, you can get that for free.
Mm-hmm.
And then also my booklet recently that I put out, My Husband Complains About My Cleaning, What Do I Do? Hint, it's not about the cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
That's one, if you're interested in that topic, which apparently a lot of people are, check out that book as well. Let's put in a word for our sponsor. And our sponsor is?
The Blue Tent, Erotic Tales from the Bible by Laria Zilber.
And Laria has arranged with us to sponsor her book, and it is a wonderful, we've read the book, and of course Judy has narrated the audio version, mm-hmm. as a matter of fact, and that is available on Amazon. And if you go to Laria's website, lariazilber.com, and that's Zilber, Z-Y-L-B-E-R, so L-A-R-I-A-Z-Y-L-B-E-R, lariazilber.com, you will get information on how to acquire that book, and we hope you will do that. Mm-hmm. And so does Laria. I hope you will do that indeed.
Right. And just also want to put in that if you have, we did not have a listener question today, but if you are a regular listener to our podcast, you know we often have listener questions. So if you have a question you would like us to talk about on the air, go to ctn7.com and write to us. And if you would like to be on our podcast, go to ctn7.com and you can suggest guests, you can suggest topics, you can suggest yourself and sign up for a spot to be interviewed on our podcast.
And so until next time,
remember, be kind,
don't panic,
and have faith.